Welcome to UX Patter Season 3, where I, Dushyant Kanungo, talk to the leaders in the design field about their journey and what inspires them to be the best. I also touch upon the aspects of the industry such as jobs, trends, and challenges, to name a few. This podcast is presented by Galaxy UX Studio and powered by Galaxy Weblinks, an Inc. 5000 company. Hello, everyone. This is Dushyant, your host from the UX Banter podcast. Welcome to another episode. And tonight, we have an award-winning creative director and maker with a can-do attitude, with an impressive track record in providing strategic brand leadership. He transforms objectives into unforgettable results. Renowned for exceptional management and collaboration skills, he crafts brand-building stories, cutting-edge technology solutions, and captivating 360 campaigns. From gaming and entertainment to technology and automotive, he has conquered diverse industries with his innovative approach and given powerful results to big players like Reebok, WWE, Barbie, HBO Now, and many more. Please welcome our guest, the creative director at the 360 agency, Hans Forsman.
Thank you for that. That's a lovely welcome. Appreciate the introduction. How are you doing today?
Joe? How are you doing today?
I'm amazing. It's a beautiful, well, I know evening in where you are. It's a beautiful morning here in the LA area. The sun, you know, is out, of course, every day, it seems like. but the weather, the humidity and the weather is, you know, dropped down a little bit in terms of it's a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. We went through a hot spell, and I know most of the world's going through a heat spell right now. So it's joyous, and, you know, I'm ready to seize the day, seize the moment, as I like to say.
So how is the creative industry holding up these days in LA, which is the epicenter, it seems, of the international creativity when it comes to the Hollywood and all the big game studios and everything, you know, running around the co-branding and Barbie, Oppenheimer, everything is happening at once.
Yeah. You know, it's a little bit of, in LA, there's never a dull moment. And there's always an opportunity. And I think that's the beauty of being here. What I like about being in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles area is there's always an opportunity to seize, you know, and I look at my past and how I've gotten to where I am. And it's always been about, you know, seizing the moment. And when you see an opportunity, reaching out and saying, I can do that, you know, and not being afraid to take a step forward. I think that's a quality in life that it goes across the gamut, whether it be working on something at home that you want to build that you've just never done before, or it being something that you're passionate about, you know, UI, UX, or making a movie. It's just taking that initial step and not being afraid to fail. And I think LA provides those opportunities when you do fail, and there's an abundant creative community to lift you up when you do fail and give you that opportunity to take that learning and put it forward and jam up.
So when we are talking about LA, how's the journey like for you? I mean, are you from LA? You started your career there, and then how did you end up being the creative professional you are?
You know, so my journey actually began in Michigan. My parents were, came across on the boat as young children. They met and fell in love, you know, this kind of beautiful immigrant story. And I went from, you know, being in a small farm town in the middle of nowhere, and not much diversity, you know, except for a few people. But I was always inspired to learn more, do more, see more. And my parents always provided me the opportunity to, you know, build. And my dad was actually a banker, but he was also an investment banker, and he bought houses. So I was always at a very young age, I was building, always out, like literally as a family, we were building. And the idea was to eventually, you know, sell these homes. My mom was an artist. Things didn't quite work out as easy as planned for that. You know, my dad passed away at a young age. Some of my brothers went off, and I looked up to my brothers as inspiration too, you know, and they went off and they were exploring the United States. and the things that they did. I had one brother who was a filmmaker and in Los Angeles. And I decided that, you know, I was going to take that knowledge and I, you know, I took small steps. And I went to Michigan State and I studied English and film thematics. And then I've got a degree in cinematography. And then, you know, during the same time, I was getting 2 degrees at the same time. And then I went to art school in Colorado. I hopped in my car. Well, I actually went to Chicago for a little while and worked in Chicago and at a photography studio for Inside Sports magazine. And then I get my first ad job, right? But then I went to Colorado to kind of explore my studies a little bit more and got a degree in multimedia at the Colorado Institute of Arts. And but at that time, it was CD-ROMs, you know, authorware. Yeah. I'm very... Yeah. And I remember my friend when the internet was just starting to, you know, he was like, there's nothing there. It's just this worthless, you know, thing. And there's pictures and, you know, a few nasty people out there. And it's all CD-ROMs, right? Is what he said. Fast forward and, you know, here we are. And we all rely on the internet and our connection. But anyways, you know, really, and it was at that point, I knew I wanted to tell stories. Always wanted to tell stories, but I also always felt like if I learned, the more I learned about the people that would be helping me tell these stories, the teams that I would build and work with, is because I really wanted to be a director. At a young age, I wanted to make films. I had a passion for Alfred Hitchcock and his work. I knew the more and more I learned, the better I could be, right? The better I could relate to an actor. I studied drama. You know, I studied being behind the camera. I studied making the, you know, doing all the artwork and animation. I studied UI UX. And, you know, as I went through and I eventually there was a moment in time where I was leaving Colorado and I was, you know, deciding to come to Los Angeles and tell stories. I packed my dog in the car and got rid of everything that I owned besides my computer. And I drove around the United States and I ended up in Los Angeles. And you realize the cost, right, of everything. Like, how do I make a movie? And I did movies in college and I realized the cost of it. I knew the cost of it was very expensive. And there was a few movies I actually worked on that I actually kind of finagled my way into certain roles, you know, of being like a key grip and not really knowing everything I should have known at that time. You know, you're out on the set and people are asking you to do certain things and you're like, ugh. But I wasn't afraid to take that step. And, you know, I ended up in Los Angeles and this when Flash was coming out and everybody was making crazy money. The tech industry was just going off the charts. And I looked at Flash and I'm like, I could teach myself that. You know, I went from authorware, which, you know, Adobe, it was at the same time Macromedia. And so I taught myself Flash and I've got this insane job. And then some things started to change in the economy. You know, there was people throwing money. I'm sure you remember those days. People were throwing money around. And then I had this job for a company called Digital Lava. And we were doing training videos for Cisco. And
computer-based tutorials or computer-based trainings, as they used to be called, CBTs.
Yeah. And I was, you know, there. And a manager there recognized me. I was doing some design work for on a little side project. And the next thing I know, they asked me to work with the marketing department. And it's all because I saw some of the things that they were doing. I'm like, God, this is not a very efficient way to do this. Not a very efficient way to do that. Maybe you can improve this on their application that they had, proprietary application. So they gave me an opportunity. And this is me again, just putting my foot forward, you know, seeing an opportunity and putting my foot forward. And next thing I know, the marketing department's like, hey, why don't you come over here? We'd like you to design the interface. I'm like, okay. You know, so, I mean, this is the early days though. It really wasn't defined as UI UX, you know? And that one of the managers, her husband worked at a big agency that had the PlayStation account. And next thing I know, she recommended me and I got a phone call. Hey, we really like your work. We understand that you know Flash. And at the course of the time I was teaching myself in the background late at night, I'd stay up all night. And I went to work for this agency. Well, you know, fast forward, market drops. We have the PlayStation account and a few fellas and I start you know, PlayStation wants an agency to stay open because all the agencies were crashing around 2001. You know, the market crashed, and we opened up a little shop in a bank, you know, just south of LA, underground. You know, they gave us this little dark spot, no windows, no nothing. And we would go in there, and PlayStation bankrolled us a little bit. They made sure that we were paid early so we could front the money, and they kept us afloat. Well, we were doing amazing work. And this is when, you know, I would work 20 hours, 24, stay up 2 days straight working on, you know, PlayStation games. And then, you know, a few people, a few of the game designers, because that's also the early days of gaming. We would do the voices and they would use your voice in the game. I'd be sitting here, and I'd be like, oh, I'll get you my pretty. And they're like, can we use that? Sure. And even Jack, like I remember one time I designed this interface for Jack and Daxter. I don't know if you're familiar with the game, but it's this old PlayStation game. And we designed the interface. Game developers, they weren't done with the artwork. 2 weeks out before launch, they contact us. They're like, can we use your interface for the game? I'm like, of course. You know, and it was like, but that in those days, of course, why not? This is fun. And that's what it was about too back then. I mean, now things have changed and there's so much more rigor behind a lot of what we do. But back then, like literally Disney games, I would do a voice. And the
biggest of the names did not realize that what impact they are going to make to the industry. Everybody was just in a mode where they just wanted to innovate without seeing the potential. Yeah. Because I think the big money after the first bubble bust that has actually come in, the substantial gains the market has taken with Google and Facebook and, you know, the rise of social media. Before that, I don't think that it was so significant that people would think about it. And everything that you just said, it just gave me so much nostalgia because I also dabbled.
You remember that, yeah.
In filmmaking, and I was an AD in Mumbai, Bollywood. So I can completely relate because we used to shoot in the film city as this protected area, which is reserved for film shootings. But also after in that studio, it borders with the national forest and the panthers would attack at night. And that was the big risk that you cannot get out of the set alone. You have to be driven. Otherwise the wildlife will, you know, cause some damage. So there was this horror film being shot across the street. And then we were shooting this film. It was a suspense drama story about one night at a motel that all the murders are happening. And me being an idiot, I was just standing in the middle of the path where the actors go walking. And Shilpa Shetty, I think she was one of the biggest stars at that time. And she was in the Big Brother house in the UK as well. And I just hear a voice that, excuse me. And I'm like, what? It's like, excuse me, you are on my way. And I turn around and there was Shilpa Shetty. And I was like the third AD who was holding paper.
I know that job.
And I got shouted at by every single person who was behind the camera that you are an idiot. It's like, okay, I'll accept that. But, you know, but then I did a film that was shown at a film festival in Mumbai, and it was 24/7 making movies, which was 7 filmmakers of 24 years of age would make a film, shoot and edit in 24 hours. And it was premiered in a big multiplex. So I saw my work on screen as well, but that was about it. I was scared of the panther. I was scared of, not the city. Mumbai is just, you know, it just kicks you. It won't let you stay. That is one thing I've learned that, you know, there are certain knack in the cities that first they won't let you in. And once you're inside, they won't let you go. And that is how Mumbai actually works. So I gave up my Hollywood dream and I'm happy with making shorts with locally in Indore.
Yeah. Well, in today's age too, you can make, you know, you can go out and again, I'm working with a friend of mine right now on a side project and you can go out and make content, you know, and the project they're working on is a content project. But, you know, today, back then, you know, to have all, to make something. And to have the tools and the cameras and the,
I also became a designer because of Flash, because I found a demo of Flash on a CD disc. And one of my friends said, oh, that's how they do animation on the internet. And we used to go to the cyber cafe to, use a 32-bit kbps connection or something. And then we started with the help of Macromedia Flash, and then that's how I learned the keyframe animation there. And the whole thing just busted open after that. So this is the 2000s and the nostalgia and the connect here that I got.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
On about the content creation side, what do you think we are doing right now?
I know, right? Hey, there we are. We're making some content.
So one thing which is I found quite interesting about people in LA, well, generally in the creative industry, but specifically in LA, they like to tell stories in a way which just pulls you in. And I think it is just in the water or the climate. I mean, every single person from LA that I have met, they love to tell you stories. And in a way which has a certain magnetism, some charm and charisma, which I don't know, it just comes from LA, I guess, just like something to do with certain cities. So,
right.
Because you also like to tell stories and storytelling is part of how user experience is served. So the role of storytelling in CX, UX, and design in general, how important it is, and how do you prefer to do it, or what are your recommendations?
Gotcha. Well, you know, I mean, it's extremely important because that brings unity within the project. And that's where the passion comes out as a team. And when you have a team that's built, you know, building a story around a particular product, say, for example, or it being a thematic, maybe it's an entertainment piece, everything has a story, right? And so when you have, for me, as a creative director, I like to get my teams involved in that story so they feel passionate about the story, right? So they're excited about the product, whether it be soap or, you know, an application, Facebook, or Meta. It's a game, you know, God of War, for example. This is the game I worked on years ago. But hey, that story, and you want people, I know I was like having a flashback. That story is something that you want to get everybody involved in on the team. And that goes from the top to the bottom. So once you have everybody involved, all the pieces, parts become like a smooth interaction, right? And it becomes an immersive experience. Now, if you flash forward now in terms of the use of AI, think of how that experience can evolve, where it creates a much more immersive experience, right? It brings that, puts order to the chaos and helps people dive deeper into an interactive experience. So where I may be out interacting with a display unit, or I may be interacting with the application, but that experience is customized to me based on the story that we're putting up forward.
So I was speaking with the creative director of Perception. I think his name is Doug Appleton. We already did one episode with him. And he's the creative director there. And their main client is Marvel Studios. And he's an Emmy Award winner designer because they did the title sequence for WandaVision, and they are with them with the Marvel Studios since Iron Man 2. So I think one of the things that I asked him is that you are designing so much sci-fi and applications around it. Do you know the canon, the weightage that it carries? Because Star Trek is now as a benchmark, people are trying to innovate the things that you saw there. What about now? Things that you're designing going to turn out. And he said that people often come to me asking for the design of that glass phone that Iron Man uses in the second movie. And that's his transparent bit. So he says, we are fine with sharing those designs with you, but we are not sure how feasibly that you are going to develop it. They recently did Black Panther Wakanda Forever. And then he was mentioning about all the sequencing, the genome sequencing, the way it was going and floating around. And my question to him was like, it was all done as AR software that we have been seeing right now these days around us. And with Apple's announcement with Apple Vision, AR and designs like that become a reality. But then again, when you were actually thinking about it, you didn't have any idea that how it is going to turn out. You may have an inkling. But what sort of design brief do you get to design such a thing? I mean, there must have somebody who thought about that. This is the application. Now design.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, when there's really not like a specific brief for it, but you have the story, right? And the best way that I've always worked, the easiest way that I've always worked with storytelling is to really get into the story, put yourself in the mindset of the people that would be in the story. For example, like, you know, Iron Man, for example, right? Putting yourself in his situation, or putting yourself in any superhero situation or any person, how they would interact. And this goes with personas, you know, persona development, right? How do you see them interacting with something? And then taking it and, you know, really just diving into the story. And it takes time. It takes time where you have to sit, let it sit, let it soak, right? You do have to give people parameters within the design brief. Like, you know, here's the story. What I like to do is we will give people parameters. This is what we want to happen. This is what we need to have, the functions need to be. But in order to come up with that design that really starts to be built around the story, all the interactive pieces that are around it. And it's also going to be influenced by what's already come before, right? I'm always amazed when you speak of movies, I'm always amazed Blade Runner, the very first Blade Runner. The reason being is a lot of what was designed in, you know, in the original Blade Runner with Harrison Ford was not even out there yet. The touch screens, you know, they were designing things that were future forward, so future forward that we had not even interacted with. But it was based on what had come before, right? It is kind of an iteration before, you know, you mentioned Star Trek, right? The early days of the screens and the big buttons and, you know, the touch.
Right.
Yeah. you know, I think that's part of it, right? We're all influenced by what's around us, culture, and what is happening now. And then you take it into a story, and you, if you have a future forward mind, and you take everything that you've learned and apply it to what you're working on. And it does take a special mind, though. It's not easy, because that is part of it, is stepping outside of the box that you kind of society's put you in, right? I think at the end of the day, it takes stepping outside of the box, the constraints that society's put you in, onto you. Yeah.
Perfect. Where are they? Where did I lose the? Oh, here they are. They are right in front of me, and I was not able to find them. My UX banter cards for.
Oh no.
Rapid fire. So, UX banter question. So, because we were talking about movies and stories, let me ask the first question: books or movies?
Boy, that's a hard one, because I could say books and movies. Can I do both? No.
You can say both. I think that's a valid answer, because generally it's just a medium. Back in the day, my dad would say that people used to complain about how much people would read. You go to a corner shop and the person would have a novel in their hands. You go to a bus or in a train, and everybody would be reading books, and people would just crib about old people, keep complaining that these people do nothing but just read books all day. And
sometimes you have to look up from the book, you know?
Right. Yeah. So if medium has changed.
Yeah. The medium has, it's so true. I have a nephew. He came to visit me, and that's all he did. He was in LA, and you'd be driving around. I'm like, hey, you want to look at the ocean? Hi. Oh, great. And then he'd go back, you know. But I admire his passion for reading. Yeah. I'd say both, you know, and books, my favorite, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Nice one. Actually, yeah. I'm going to compile a list of all the books which are recommended by all the guests on this show, and I'm definitely going to make a separate post about it. But this is very interesting. And I think that book is not just about the comedy part of it, but the philosophy that it carries. It's always resonating. Yeah. In fact, when they made a movie on it, I mean, the first thing that everybody was saying that, can they make a movie about that book? But in the end, it was quite an experience as well. So visually, I think it is one of those instances where you can't complain about the movie. I mean, generally, whenever there is a
book
about a book, you know, everybody just goes crazy that what the hell happened?
It's so true. It's so true. And I think, you know, that speaks to, you know, in a sense, stepping outside of the box too, you know, I mean, in terms of storytelling. Movies, Blade Runner.
Oh, movies, Blade Runner, and book is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Initial, the first Blade Runner, yeah.
Anyway, right. Your favorite holiday destination?
Holiday destination, Maine.
Maine?
Maine, the state of Maine. mainly rains in Maine. No, it doesn't mainly rain in Maine, but if you go to the state of Maine, and I'll tell you why, it's mainly because it's a place where I find I can be to myself and, you know, sit with your mind and open your mind and let all the things that are in the world that are, you know, trying to put you in a box, kind of step away from that so you can have free thought. And it's a very refreshing place to be. Love
it. Amazing. And that's
drop down a tree or, yeah, do whatever you want there. Or just yell in the woods. Oh,
actually, you did not say Venice Beach, but that's all right. Sunrise or sunsets?
Boy, sunrise.
Sunrise in Maine or in LA?
Boy, sunrise in Maine.
And sunset in LA?
Sunsets in LA. Sunsets in LA. Yeah. It's a fresh start to the day. And then you have the closing where you're just, you know, savoring everything that you did during the day.
One superpower that if you had one.
Okay. You know, it's funny. My son asks me this all the time. He's a superpower comic book kid. And we have this conversation. He asked me like multiple times all the time, Dad, what superpower would you have? And I'm like, didn't we talk about this already? Yeah, it's super speed. And he's convinced me that it's the best one to have. Yeah, because, you know, when you think about it, you can go back in time. You know, if you're the Flash, you can go back in time. You can, in a sense, be somewhere and no one can see you because you're moving so fast. So you kind of, it's kind of like a multi-use superpower, you know, where it's, you're not just stuck to one.
Snack a lot, though. I mean, you have to keep eating to keep the calorie count down.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But that's, hey, you get to snack a lot. And you can't worry about it.
Nobody will know. Somebody's eating a burger and it's gone.
Gone. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's funny. I try to stump my son out of it all the time. And he's like, no, Dad, but super speed, you can do that. You can do that. You can run back in time.
The movie Jumper. That is my favorite one. And that is the superpower that I would like to have, just to just snap and just, you know, appear at a different place. Yeah. You just have to imagine it. And I think that is the best one. No borders. If I want to have breakfast in Italy or say lunch by the beach in Nice or Cannes, I can have that. And dinner is, you know, maybe in, not in San Francisco. I mean, I think the food is terrible there, but, you know, somewhere.
That's funny. You know, but, you know, when it comes down to what my son would say, well, super speed, you can do that too. You can, you know, you be there.
True. But to both, but I'm like, I don't want to run.
There you go.
All right. Your favorite mobile phone app?
My favorite mobile phone app, X or Twitter.
Ah, no, don't be sarcastic. Just be honest.
It is, you know, and I'll tell you why. That's hilarious. You know, the reasons being is I appreciate what Elon Musk does. And I know he's a controversial fella. But he also takes risks, you know, he takes risks. And I appreciate his mindset when it comes to that. You know, I think there's a lot of haters that are jealous because he has the opportunity, he has the voice, right? Do a lot of things, make a lot of things happening. But you have to applaud him. I mean, I do. I applaud him for a lot of the things that he's taken a chance on, you know, whether going to outer space or Tesla. Creating new opportunities. And he's, you know, of course, there's the naysayers, there's the negative, you know, sides to all those things. But I do appreciate also, you know, freedom of speech. And I know it can be hurtful sometimes, but I also do value it. And I like where he's taking things.
But my counter argument to that would be, if you start something, you should see that it actually reaches to the end. Your focus is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the Mars, work on that. Let's make sure that you have cheaper Teslas out there. make sure that the infrastructure work is being done in other countries where you're focusing. I'm a big fan of the solar cell tiles that he has developed. And there are islands
on
Atlantic where they have just reduced the use of a diesel to zero because there is no alternative power sources there. And that is the kind of work that, you know, when you're doing it, it really feels that you are, you know, going with the Starlink. The work which is happening with that in Ukraine is amazing and phenomenal, to be honest. And it is much ahead in terms of when Google is keep talking us about those balloon-based internet, the Starlink is actually functional and it's working. But then mm-hmm. the problem with Twitter is that it's a toy in his hands, because in the end, it just ended up being a big boy's toy. Just, I mean, that's my personal opinion. It has nothing to do with Galaxy or the studio, or please ban our accounts.
But yeah.
I feel that, you know, he could have avoided the whole thing. I mean, as greater a gentleman that, you know, you want him to be, sometimes your greatness is what becomes your enemy. It's like,
it's, you know, it is hard. And I have to say, you know, when you're the one who's managing groups of people, right? And maybe, for example, like even in creative, when you're creative directing something, you always have the outside voices, the opinions that are coming in and at you. And you have to stay focused. I get where you're coming from. You know, you have to stay focused on the objective. You know, what is that story? Is that story remaining consistent? You know, are you true to the story? But for him, if you take it in his perspective, he has the opportunity to create these things. He sees an opportunity with the tunnel boring company. You know, and here in Los Angeles, they were building a train.
The tunnel boring and those flamethrowers, they're fun. I mean, that is understandable that the guy is having fun with the money. But the thing is that the amount of toy, the size of the toy, which is actually just consuming the whole thing, you promised to bring humanity to the new frontiers. And you became that hero that everybody was looking up to. They want to know what mm-hmm. you're doing. And suddenly you jump into the political swamp. And then there is...
I'm not a fan. I agree with you on that. I'm not a fan of the politicking with anything. When it comes to products and, you know, I think people need to, but, you know, media is a huge media, especially, you know, well, globally, you know, has a lot of power to change minds. And I think it's one of the biggest threats to society today. And I think, you know, people need to be more reliant on themselves, doing the research themselves, you know, and coming up with answers rather than listening to headlines, you know, and responding and reacting in that manner. But I get you. I'm not a fan of politicking, especially when you have that kind of power. But I do appreciate a lot of the initiatives that he's done, you know, in seeing failures, especially with an infrastructure. You know, if you look at the Boring Company in Los Angeles, they were wasting a bunch of money on the train because a bill was passed. Right. And you saw an opportunity to make something better. And I, as a maker, I applaud, you know, there's always an opportunity to make it better. And as you know,
the thing that they're doing right now is that building a big city near Austin, Texas, where they are going to house a lot of people. They are going to make a model township of how life is going on Mars. And then they are going to do experiments there. And I think that is going to be one exciting project that they are working on. And the groundwork has started. They have acquired the land long back and it is in full swing. You can actually check it out on Google Maps. It is.
I didn't know that. I have to check that out.
The township Musk is building in Austin, because he had to move his businesses around out of California because of the taxation issues that he was facing here.
Yes, I'm very aware of that. Yeah.
Being an Indian citizen, I know a lot of things in what's going on in the U.S. I mean, I know it's not like hardly my business, but
no, it's okay. It's, you know, it's funny. I mean, everybody, that's the thing is you have a perception. Everybody has a perception of what you read, right? What's in the media. And when sometimes, you know, the media is looking for clicks, they're looking to make money, and which is understandable, but it's also harmful to society, you know, when it's slanted headlines and, you know, that some people, a lot of people just don't read the full story, you know, and no, I think that's one of the big threats to society.
With the question mark.
Yeah. And they're like,
perception. So coming back, we were talking about the future where the Elon Musk was taking us. The ship's interiors have been minimalized to, you know, just a keyboard, like Titan mishap with that, bringing that up. But the SpaceX ship that actually went to the space, the manned mission that happened, the clothes they were wearing and the interior of the ship was pretty simplified. So same thing is happening with the AR side of things, as people are more and more going into wearing those big goggles and, you know, performing day-to-day operations. So you were talking about earlier, before we started recording, you were talking about your experiences with AR in the early days of the technology.
Yeah. The early days of the technology, you know, of course, AR was being, there was a lot of testing going on with AR. But before it really started to become super popular in terms of, you know, what can we use AR for and how can we use it for consumer-based products and how will people interact with it? And this is around 2006. You know, at that, before that, it was still quite a bit, you know, it was quite clunky. You know, at that time I was working with on Reebok, and we were trying to come up with new ways to help sell product. You know, when we were brainstorming, and you know, we read some articles on augmented reality, and we're like, "Wow, well, how about, you know, what if we incorporated augmented reality in a website to sell a T-shirt?" And this is, you know, literally part of the conversation, and we're like, "Oh yeah, and you could do this, and you could wear a sports jersey," and you know, at that time, all of a sudden, you know, light clicked, and like, "Dang, hey, why don't we develop this as a product?" I mean, this was the early days of back with Zugara, when I worked with Zugara. You know, and what we realized is we had this like great idea. So we patented the idea, the concept of being able to wear clothing, went out, made a product of it, and quickly shortly after we patented it, several companies came out with Texas Instruments, Intel, and a lot of companies came out with vaporware. And, you know, vaporware is where, in a sense, if you're not familiar with it, the term is if you're showing a product using video or any other means, and it's not possible, it's literally not proven yet. And there was a lot of companies that were coming out and showing something that was functional in terms of how AR could work, right? And showcasing it as if it was a reality. And we quickly learned in our testing that the hardware systems were not up to par yet in terms of what can happen or what users can do in augmented reality. So, you know, for example, our cameras right here, that in order to have inclusion back in the early days of AR, you know, being able to just lock in on the face with our webcams here was pretty difficult to do. Like, we triangulate with the eyes, the chin, and the nose, right? In order to set a shirt, we quickly realized, like a magic mirror, we quickly realized that, you know, if someone walks behind you, or there's a light flicker, it would set off that camera, and then next thing you know, the shirt would jerk over, move over to the side, you know, and so we had all these difficult hardware problems that we were trying to combat, right? And we were trying to create algorithms to work around all that. Eventually, we realized that it just wasn't there at the time. And we were ahead of the time, right? We were out there trying to get funding for webcam social shopper is what it was called. And at the same time, we also patented Zugstar, which is the ability to interact with an object in the same video stream. So you and I, for example, batting a ball back and forth. Several companies came to us and wanted to, you know, being able to open a drawer, right? Or we're playing a game here in this in our video stream, or manipulate an object. But and then more and more we went on, we did some executions, and it was Barbie Dream Closet. We would get to see yourself wearing Barbie's clothes, and it was a huge execution we did in New York Fashion Week, and was using our product, webcam social shopper. Now, since that point, time has changed, and the hardware is a little better, a little better, a little better. But one thing that I realized, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, and, you know, when you're looking at it, and the more and more I spent my time, you know, doing different studies, working on the UI UX, how people interact with it, I quickly realized that I don't think it's going to get there until mixed reality is possible. And mixed reality where you're not inhibited, you know, where it's my glasses, your glasses.
I was saying that I agree that the mixed reality is something that I was also in the favor that you can't just have VR because it just isolates you 100%. But where they are, augmented reality is something that, you know, gives you the feel of with the real world. So two examples here. One, I was working for Santander Bank in London back in the 2014-15 was the time frame, and the bank decided that they wanted to have an app on Google Glass. They got me a kit and then they said that we want to make an application, and we don't want it to make it too complex that how the bank application is going to work. And the orders were that just navigate to the nearest cash machine. Because anywhere you are in the city, the one thing that you need is when you're wearing the glasses, you just want to find the nearest cash machine. And I was like, okay, let me give it a try. Because it just had this small box here where all the data was displayed. Just like here.
Yeah, like a little.
Because of that, the peripheral vision, it would float somewhere here on top of it. So because of that screen size, I said, let's see what other people are doing. Because generally how we started working, because when the mobile phones came and there were a bunch of screens available and we would go out and design about anything. But Google Glass, surprisingly, there was nothing available that I can take a reference from that how the hell we are supposed to do it. And the only way that we can actually design anything there was to go and read the Google's official documentation. And I'm like, designing something for benchmarking the user experience.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. I mean, it was a good challenge. And we finally actually came through with it. And it was like, you just swipe and you select and say, yeah, I want to find a cash machine. And the arrow in the front float that go to the left, go to the right. And I didn't have to look at my phone for the directions. And just my
that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
Walk me through. But then the project was completely scrapped because Google discontinued glasses. That was another story. But we finally made the design and the application was there. So it was an amazing experience. And second thing was with Nokia, before they were sold to Microsoft, they had this entire umbrella of services called HERE. And HERE apps were heavily reliant on AR. So if I am in the middle of the street and I want to know that where to eat because it's a new country or a new city, I would just simply take my camera out and I can just roll around and it will tell me the star rating of the restaurant. And if it is busy or not busy, the data would fetch, show me the availability or the wait times generally. And also general data that you see on Google, but is it too expensive, little expensive, and all that information was on that square. I can just scan and see the 2-star ones and the 5-star ones. I mean, rating wise. So it was one. And second was a job application one. So it was a job lens, as they would call it. And you, in the middle of the marketplace, you can just scan and it will tell you that there is a job. And there is a job.
No, I like that. That's cool. Yeah. That's great. I mean, you know, it's funny. Like we had the team that I worked with from Zagara. We also developed one that was, it reminded me, it was an app that we worked on for a long time. It's called Garpy, geolocation app. And it was very similar in terms of, you know, is using AR, you know, so you could point and it would give you directions, right? You go find friends. And it was, we had the chat built into it. Also, we had it set, like, you know, if you go to a store, we had, you know, marketing platform built into it too. Like, for example, you were outside of an AT&T store, right? For example, and you could see like any deals that were there or, you know, different promotions. And we also, the one other thing was the cemetery. We thought was always great. We thought, gal, you know, you can put your life story and then you go up next to a tomb and, you know, you got someone's life story and you can learn about them and, you know, leave messages, little graffiti marks and stuff like that for, you know, family members and leave flowers in the virtual world. But anyway.
You're putting QR codes on the gravestones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, think about that, the opportunities and then where you can. I would love that. I would actually just go to the cemetery to learn about other people, you know?
And people can actually make a video before they die that if you have scanning this, you, that means I am dead. Here is my life story. Sit down, weary traveler.
I love it. I love it. See, now there's a storytelling comes in, right? Now we're good to go.
All right. So about the machine learning and the AI and what is the future of AI with HCI, the HCD as it is also referred. And how do you see it, that where we are headed in right now?
I embrace it. I'm super excited about it. I think the future, now I think there are, some precautions that need to be put in place. But the tough thing about that is, society is what it is. And you're not going to be able to control everybody. There are going to be people out there who will develop AI without precautions built in. But, understanding its power, because I really do think that it opens the mind. I use it all the time now as part of my work daily. I use it for advice. I use it for writing tips, ideation, and, data analysis. It allows me and gives me the time that allows me to perform more, create more. And it also frees up my mind just to think creatively. The beautiful thing about AI right now is it requires us, right? It requires our inputs. It hasn't left us yet. It's not autonomous yet. So, which is the spooky part. But I do see currently.
We don't know that for sure, actually. That is.
Yeah, I know. We don't know that for sure, right? Yeah. I mean, I think about it all the time. Is that we're a product of our inputs. The inputs that you had when you were growing up, the inputs that I had when I was growing up, and all the things that we do learn from people, how we learn how to manage those, right? Do we get angry? Do we hold on to anger? Do we let it go? Do we move on and move forward? But, just as the machine, right? It's a product, but AI is a product of its inputs, which is that, will it be able to get to an autonomous, or for example, just as you mentioned, is it already autonomous, right? Because it is a product of its inputs, and who's inputting what information, whatever image is taking. In terms of AI in the future, I also see, I have some friends that are working on some projects in terms of rapid prototyping. The ability to get things in market super fast, whether it comes, and in terms of, finding out, what are the options, what's most available, what would be the most competitive thing in the market, whatever it may be, and then taking that and then visualizing it quickly, and then taking that visualization and putting it out into the market in terms of e-commerce, and even having that linked up so you could have it, whatever super popular could then be met, produced relatively quickly, having that set up with factories where you can just output whatever, element, whatever shirt example, that you want created. And the possibility is limitless, and even, choosing your kid of the future, and then the manipulation of DNA.
Asking ChatGPT that if you have $100 and you are a business entrepreneur, and I am your handyman, I'll do whatever you say, but we have a budget of $100. Let's do a business. Can you just write ideas about a profitable business that we can do together? And then it will tell you ideas, and all you have to do is just follow.
I love it.
Trust me, it is very scary. Then there are organizations which are 100% relying on ChatGPT to make decisions, that every single thing which is going to happen in the organizations are going to be decided by AI. So you're not just asking the ideas, but also giving the system the feedback that what was the result of the last decision when it went out in the real world. So it is learning more about the new data sets which are being fetched by the outputs provided by the system. So
yeah.
I spent about a week on it and ended up writing a book. It was a funny book, but it happened.
Wow. I think that you still need, that's the thing is with AI, it's also, it's based on its inputs, right? And if it's pulling from the internet, I think you always need the human to make sure that, anything I do with AI, I make sure I review it, read it, double check it. But it does allow me, it gives me that opportunity to have a little bit more time to ideate or get inspired by additional ideas, you know. But what you mentioned in terms of, you know, just doing is, that's the scary part too. We don't want to be just.
There are Silicon Valley startups who are getting funding just because they say we are doing what the computer is asking us to do. And that's why we need the funding, because this is the idea. This is not us. This is the GPT or the AI is asking us to do. And that is where the scariest part starts, that if it is really that level of dependency which is happening. But then if you think about it, if you are in education and nobody can say anything about that, you're not going to learn. So I was digging in with a lot of history lessons. My dad used to be a history professor. Now he retired. So we were talking about a time which was about 500 BC, that what was happening around where we live. And we tried to drill down to the most dates as it could find documented. But rather than drilling down on Wikipedia, I thought that was an amazing way to explore about what was happening at the same time in US, or what was happening at the same time in London. And it would tell you the timeline wise that what the parallel histories were in a tabular format, that this was in Asia, this was in Europe, this was in US, and then you can see the same timeline. But talking about education and AI, I mean, you also teach a lot of courses in on the education side.
Yeah, I do. So my wife and her business partner, we own a school. It's the Realm Creative Academy here in Los Angeles. And, you know, we teach at the center. It's not really a center. It's actually our school. It's more of a enrichment center is what it's called. So kids, most of the kids that come there, or all the kids that come there, are homeschool kids, or they're kids that are taking supplemental courses in education. So it's not a traditional school per se, but what it does allow, it allows for parents to choose the curriculum that they want their children to have. And part of the courses that are there, one of the courses there is artificial intelligence, is AI. Other courses are in UI UX, you know, but there's a myriad of courses in terms of, but the point being of the class is there, it's all about doing and learning. So for example, there's courses in civil engineering where the kids go out and learn about the city, and they're exploring the city. At the same time, they're also interacting with nature, and they're learning about nature while they're out exploring the city and the implications that happen when someone, you know, creates a building without thinking about the environment, for example, right? Now, in terms of artificial intelligence, the kids are utilizing it already and learning about inputs, right? The implications of it, and preparing themselves for the future. You know, and I'm amazed at young minds, because when they, you know, dip in and where their minds go, because their minds are so free, you know, that again, they don't have a lot of the constraints that society's put on the rest of us, but where they take things, you know, it's like, you know, when you see a young child pick up an iPad and the first time they start exploring the interface and it just becomes natural to them. It's almost as if AI comes natural to them. It's like, why wouldn't you be able to talk to the machine? The machine talk back to you and supply you answers. Why wouldn't that happen? But it's an amazing center. And to me, every time I talk to these kids, I feel so inspired. I walk away and my mind is set free with the possibilities. And I feel inspired too about the future, because they don't see the dark side of it all. I mean, that's not where their minds are.
Do you think is good enough for your child to learn more about the computers and AI and learn the interaction or the design parts, or say UX design principles, if I have to go very specific? Do you think that the grasping happens earlier on, or empathy building is important earlier on in the days before we jump into the full-on UX level understandings?
I think it's important early on, because it's important for them to understand where it's coming from. And I think, just like all things in life, I think sometimes we try to protect young minds from things that are a reality, right? And it's good for them to have an understanding of how something works and not have, you know, not find out later that, oh my gosh, all this time the computer was thinking on its, you know, thinking for me, or, you know, because it's like, you know, telling somebody, hey, when they're 12 years old, I'm not your parent. And I've been your parent your whole life, right? You're adopted. Like my son's adopted, and I look at it in a different light. He's known his whole life that he's adopted. You know, he's my world. But you know, I look at, you know, it's about telling the truth too, right? You know, and making sure that it's clear to them so they understand the implications of where AI could take them in the future. And I think also understanding UI UX, this part is part of what they're going to interact with in the future, right? And how they interact with it is going to have implications on society, how they create the world, you know, in front of them, because everything is going to involve, you know, user experience. Everything is going to involve customer experience, right?
So,
and if they have a full on understanding, it just means that there's going to be more progression in society. You know, we'll be in a better place in the future.
So this was about the children, but what about the young professionals who are out there? Any advice that you would like to give to them to follow in your footsteps, or what are the do's and the don'ts for the next generation of designers?
For the next generations of designers, I would say, don't pigeonhole yourself and one discipline. You know, build as many skills as you can. Take advantage of all the opportunities that are put in front of you. I would say, you know, learn as much as you can and don't be afraid of any opportunity.
Excellent.
Save your work. I, you know, I come from the day of, you know, the computer crash, you lost everything. And, you know, and we didn't have as much storage space, you know, back in the day of the old SideQuest and the tapes.
You know, I know. I just remember the earlier designs that we did back in 2001 and 2 and 3, and none of it is there. And even I wrote some on the CD drives, and those are gone too. And some of them, which I uploaded to Google Photos back in the day, Yahoo Photos, then it migrated to Kodak, and then Kodak to Google Photos. And so rather than this size, now they are like this big. I don't know what happened during the resizing or the compression algorithms of migration of one
platform. Crazy.
So I don't have, you know, those designs, and I feel sad about it. They were not the greatest, but still it would have been nice to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have one. I have a design that it still sticks in my head. It was based off of Aliens, Geiger's work, and I did this, you know, crazy early days of Photoshop, and I still lament on losing it. But I did want to say one thing about kids. You know, I think the sooner that we can expose them to UI UX and AI, the better. Just like all things that are part of our society, I think, you know, especially in the United States, you have. Well, other places in the world, you know, there's social norms and things that do's and don'ts and things that we're going through society. But when we hide it, kids can't learn how to deal with it. The kids can't learn how to manage it and think on their own, you know. And by hiding things from them, we're doing the kids a disservice for the future.
Absolutely sound advice. And I couldn't agree more with what you have just said. So thank you very much, Hans, for joining us this early morning your time. And I will look forward to the final edit of this episode. And everybody who is listening in, please make sure that you get the learnings from this episode straight up. I think it was one of the exhilarating conversations that we had that I think we just didn't think about the time. And it was like...
Oh, wow. I didn't notice the time either.
So thank you very much. And people, if they want to get in touch with you, Hans, they can reach out to you on your LinkedIn as one of the sources. Do you have a website that you would like to give us?
Yeah, I do. My website is just my full name, Hans Forsman at hansforsman.com. Also, did want to plug the Realm Creative Academy. if I can.
Yes. I just do. So thank you very much once again for joining in, and stay tuned for our next episode. So thank Hans, and I hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Goodbye, guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.